Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Tzadi Vavam and Aleph, and the Gemara asks, Elo kederot shel mikdash, when it comes to these utensils, kli cheres in the mikdash, amai yishavru, why do we break them? Nadrinu lekivshonot, let us return them to the kiln to fire them up again. And Rashi over here explains what happened. He says that we concluded in yesterday's Gemara the question that Rami Bar Chama had posed, which was whether, when it says that a kli cheres needs to be broken, is that connected to Bliut, or is that connected to Bishul? And he says, how kimna? We've already concluded, taima mishum biluahi. The reason that you have to do merika and shtifa is because of the absorption into the kli. Biluah bishul kapoka yikra. The pasuk does not focus on Bishul. The name of gzeret katuv, just to say it's gzeret katuv. Anytime you cook in there, you've got to do merika and shtifa. Unehid mishkan ktiv yishaver. The Torah says explicitly you have to break it. So what's the question here at all? So the problem was in the Mishkan or in the Midbar, they weren't stationary. They weren't in a location where they could put together these kilns and they could fire up the kelim because they were always on the move. And if when they weren't on the move, they didn't know when they were going to move, so they never set up kivshonot. Aval mimikdash, where we're in a permanent structure, a permanent location, nahadrino the kivshonot. Let us return the kli cheres to the kiln and fire them up. So Rashi assumes that we have now concluded, based on the Gemara's assumption, with why there is a kli matechet for the tanur in the mikdash, and the answers that were given in yesterday's daf, that we now know that it's all about bliut. It's all about absorption into the kli. Bishul is not a factor, so it's not a gzerat katuv. Once it's not a gzerat katuv, then what we're really trying to do is get rid of that which is balua betoch hakli. So yishaver, that's one option to do it. But there is another option, which is nadrino lekiv shanot. Let us go back and fire them up in the kiln. So that's why you can see here in the girsa amar rachman that's taken out, for Rashi, it's not a question on why the Torah demands yishaver. It makes sense that you have to be shover. The real question is, why isn't there an alternative, which is to refire it up and put it in the kiln? And Tosfot, at the end of this, Tosfot here says, V'lok sfarim degar se'alcha, derot shamikdash, amay amar rachmana yishavru, la'adru l'kiv shanot, demashma deparich hakra. Sounds like they're asking on the pasuk, mit gamar, amay amar rachmana. Why does the Torah say yishaver? That's not really the question of the Gemara. The question of the Gemara is, why is it that we don't use kivshonot? Not why is it that shvira is allowed? Because if the whole problem is bliut, you can remove the bliut, as we just discussed in the Gemara, by refiring the kli cheres. And once you've refired the kli cheres, it is now as if it's new, and there is no bliut in it, and then it'd be usable. So why can't we use that as a solution rather than breaking of the kli cheres? So according to Rashi, we've come to the conclusion with regards to Rami Bar Chama's question yesterday, when it says that a kli cheres needs to be broken, is that connected to bliut, or is that connected to bishul? The answer to that question is that it is connected to bliut and not to bishul. It's not a gzeret hakatuv about bishul. It's about absorption. And once it's about absorption, this is the question. Then if you look in the Baal HaTosafot approach this from two different directions. In essence, they say that no matter which way you go, you could ask this question. And he first starts out with the assumption that it is a gzeret hakatuv, that the pasuk says that anytime you cook, you need to break the kli cheres. And if that's the case, then tema maikashuleh ha'taima deshvira la mishum b'liyahavya el gzeret hakatuv. What's the question here in the Gemara? Since this is a gzeret hakatuv about bishul, why is the Gemara asking, can you put it back into the kiln or fire it up and then take out the bliut? That's not the reasoning behind why a kli cheres needs to be broken. The reason why a kli cheres is being broken is because it is a gzeret hakatuv, that anytime you cook in it, you've got to break it. If it's a gzeret hakatuv, then there's no real question. It doesn't get off the ground. So then the Rabbeinu Tam refines the question of the Gemara and says, Rabbeinu Tam haya omer, shegehusku nasu kekelim chadashim. When you fire them up in the kiln, they become like a totally new kli. So then that should be the equivalent of shvira. Even if you believe there's a gzeret hakatuv, that you break the kli cheres because you can't use it anymore, that's a gzeret hakatuv, then if you fire it in the kiln, it's as if you've broken it. It's as if it doesn't exist anymore. It's panim chadua shel bol dekan. It's a totally new kli, and it's the equivalent of breaking the kli. So why isn't that a sufficient solution to the problem? So that's the one way the Baal HaTosafot learn it. Then they go through a whole discussion about the nature of the isur over here. And then in the end, they come back and say, V'nir lefaresh, v'me'achar, shehitir ha-katuv, klei nechoshet b'merika b'shtifa, u'b'klei cheres lo hitir. The fact that the Torah says by klei nechoshet, that merika and shtifa is sufficient, and by klei cheres, it does not allow that. Sh'mamina, detam mishum b'liyahu. So then you see the real reason here is because of b'liyut. V'zeh yotzeh midei dofno, v'zeh no yotzeh midei dofno. Because that comes out, min is polate, and by the klei cheres, it's not polate. The reason that you have to break the kli when you do bishul, when there's no bliut, when there's no absorption here, is following that same svara. Because the Torah considers it as if there is bliut over here. But if that's the case, then only hagalah is not a sufficient means to get it out. Aval b'chamzerat kivshanot, you'd say, you put it back into the kivshan, then you should be fine. So the Baal Tosafot entertain both possibilities. They first entertain the possibility that it is a gzeret ha-katuv about bishul, has nothing to do with bliut. And the reason the Gemara is asking about refiring it in the kiln is because you turn it into a new kli. You turn it into a new kli, you start it from zero, and it's as if you broke it. So why isn't that sufficient? Baal Tosafot back away from that and try another approach, which is to say that it is all about bliut. How do I know that? It's because the Torah contrasts the kli nechoshet, we have merika and shtifa, and the kli cheres, we have shvira. So even though the Torah requires by bishul, without bilua, the breaking of the kli, underlying that is the reasoning of bliut. And so therefore, even when there is no bliut, it can't be more chamur than the situation when there is bliut. And by bliut, we said hagala is not sufficient for kli cheres, but firing it in the kiln, as we saw in yesterday's daf, is sufficient. If that's the case, I could solve the problem by simply firing it in the kiln. So as opposed to Rashi, who says the Gemara concluded for sure that it's all about bliut, Baal Tosafot first day is exer the ketuv about bishul, then they come back and say maybe it is about bliut. So in essence, they're saying no matter which way you think the conclusion of the Gemara is, there's a fair question over here. It's either a question because it's exer the ketuv, and then why can't the panim chadashot solve the problem? Or it's a problem of bliut, and why can't the firing in the kiln, as we saw at the end of yesterday's daf, solve the problem for you over here? The Baal Tosafot over here suggests that there might be a difference between a tanur and klei cheres, and that a tanur, the Mishnayot seem to require that it be broken. So the Baal Tosafot ask, based on their first assumption, that the firing in the kiln is panim chadashot, why can't we always use that as the solution to the problem when there's tumah? Meaning that if you say the problem is bliut, and this is a solution for bliut, that's one thing. But if you say this is a solution to the problem, even it's a gzer da katuva bishul, because it's panim chadashot, then why can't this be the solution to all problems when you have a kli cheres, when it's tamei? Why do you have to break it? Just fire it up in the kiln. So the Baal Tosafot say, maybe there's a difference between a tanur and a kli cheres. And he brings two reasons to differentiate. One reason is that a tanur you can't put into the kivshan. You don't put it into a fire that is surrounding it on all sides and heating it up like firing it in the kiln. That is something that resets the kli. Simply heating it up is not sufficient to make it into a new kli. So there, in that case, the blowtorch may not suffice because it doesn't bring the heating from all sides at once. That's one thing that he mentions. The second thing he mentions is that a kli that is continuously used in the fire, maybe firing it in the kiln is not sufficient in order to reset it. The whole purpose of the tanur is to be used in the fire, and it's always used in the fire. So then putting fire on it may not do anything because that's its natural state, and that's where it's being used. Maybe therefore firing it in a kiln doesn't help it. So that's how the Tosafot tries to differentiate between a tanur and a kli cheres, but those distinctions might then demand that the type of kashering that you do over here is a full heat surrounding the utensil rather than simply a heat on the utensil in all areas like you do with a blowtorch that may not suffice over here. So Tosafot over here asked the question, I think, Josh, that you were asking a little bit, which is, why does the Torah demand over here that you do shvira? And he says, Vim tomar, lam mitzvich hakatuv shvira, the lo shayach lemeimar lakatuv, because about a pasuk you can't say dilma chayis, that maybe he'll be too scared to fire it up and it'll burst, because that's a takanat or gzerat chachamim. Velo she'ein osim kivshanot b'Yerushalayim, and the fact that we don't make kilns in Yerushalayim is also only a gzerat derabanan. So mido raita, there is a way to solve the problem, and therefore why do you need shvirat kli here at all? Now for Rashi, the question is really in the reverse, which is, shvira works, and that takes care of the problem. The Gemara's question is, firing it up in the kiln, why isn't that a good way to deal with the problem instead of using shvira? Tosfot actually says, why do you need Shvira at all? Meaning that putting it into the Kivshan is so much of a better solution, and the Torah should have prescribed it because that would have been all the chashashot we have, or all chashashot midrabanan. He says, v'leish lomar chidushu, shitira katu b'shvira, that Shvira dekli is actually a kula, and not a chumra. Davamino d'lomhanya Shvira. I would have thought Shvira is not sufficient, came in the daim tamachatat b'cheres, since the bliut is still in the cheres. So according to this view that there's bliut there, the best way to get it out would have been to put it back into the kivshan. And so Tosfot says, well, if that's the case, why does the Torah even prescribe Shvira at all? So he says that the Shvira of the Torah is a chiddush that you can use Shvira, and that solves your problem, even though the chatat is still absorbed in the kli, we say Shvira works. So that's the kula of Shvira. The Gemara at this point wants to know why not use the better solution, which is putting it back into the kivshan. Rashi sees the question in the opposite direction, which is, we have Shvira, that's a given. So now, why can't we also use the heating up in the Kivshan? Because it's all about Bliut. So if Shvira works, then why doesn't Kivshanot also work over here? Because it solves the problem that we're after. So the Gemara answers, Amar Rabbi Zeira, Lefi She'eino Sim Kivshanot B'Yerushalayim. It's because we don't make kilns in Yerushalayim. The truth is, it's not necessarily related to Yerushalayim in particular. That's for two reasons. One is that we know here that the Shvirat Kli Cheres and the need to take care of this problem is B'makom Kadosh in the Azara. So the truth is here that you're not making a kiln in the Azara, not just in Yerushalayim. Number two is, these are of the takanot that were made in the Gemara Baba Kama when they came into Eretz Yisrael. Takanot, Ezra, takanot, Yeshua, about things that went on in the land, social structures, social and civil laws that were put into place for the betterment of society. Some of them are about the land in general. Some of them are about living in cities. And some of them are about Yerushalayim in particular. This happens to be about Yerushalayim in particular, but also has application to other cities, which is, in general, we don't want the kivshonot. We don't want these kilns in the city bellowing smoke and then causing ash and causing blackness all over everything that's around there. So we want the kivshonot to be outside the city, outside of the residential areas, so it doesn't affect the quality of living of the individuals. And that's true of the kivshonot in Yerushalayim as well. It's going to affect the quality of life. In Yerushalayim, there's an added issue, which is, it's Yerushalayim. So we don't want industrial type of work being done in Yerushalayim. So Marabaye, v'chi asin ashpatot ba'azara. So the alternative is a better alternative over here. Do you make garbage piles inside of the azara? Meaning that here, you have to break the kli cheres. So you're breaking the kli cheres, you're going to have shards of kli cheres stacked up in the azara, from all the breaking of the kli cheres that are brought to the mikdash. If you tell me, okay, but that's the mitzvah. The mitzvah is to do it this way, and you're going to have to make it into a garbage dump over there. Well, if you're going to say that already, then say you could put a kivshan in place. That's a better solution than making it into a garbage heap to solve your problem. So, ashbitete hadetani shmaya bikalanbo. So he says he forgot, or it slipped from him, that which we know from Shmaya when he was in Kalanbo. Shivrei klei cheres nivla'in bimkoman. The shards of pottery are swallowed up in place in the Azara. It's one of the miracles in the Azara that they were swallowed up. And therefore, that was a better solution or better option for taking care of the klei cheres. Kilns in Yerushalayim don't exist. And since we can't kasher them, then we're only left with one option, which is the option of Shvira. And that option's a better option because of the miracle that the shards were swallowed up. And therefore, it doesn't leave any residual garbage heap. So that's a better solution than putting in a kivshan to try to solve the problem. But that means that, in general, putting it back into the kiln would be a successful way to deal with the issue. The only problem is that the kivshanot just don't exist in Yerushalayim to use that as a potential solution. That the tanur in the mikdash was made out of metal. Navid de cheres. Why don't we make it out of clay? Why don't we make it out of earthenware? De seko b'mifnimu, because it is fired up inside. So now, if you remember, we just had the discussion in yesterday's daf that something that's fired up inside, you can kasher, because you can reheat it to the level that it was before. You're not worried about it bursting or breaking because it's used in that way. And you can kasher an oven of kli cheres from the inside. So why not use a oven of kli cheres? And again, that was a more standard type of oven in that day. Why did they use an oven of klei matechot? If it's the problem of shvira, then you can solve that problem by hesekho bifnim, and you can make sure that there's no problem by reheating it inside. My answer is, keivan de'ika shtei lechem v'lechem apanim. Since you have these items that are baked inside of the oven, the afyatan bitanur. They are baked in this tanur of the azara, v'kedushatan bitanur, and they become kadosh in the tanur. And that is because the shtei lechem and the lechem apanim don't have any oil in them, and therefore they're not placed into a kli sharet before they're baked. That means that their preparatory stages are done, not inside of the kodesh, not inside of a kli sharet. What is mikadesh them is when they are baked inside of the oven in the azara, and that oven is functioning as the kli sharet for these items, and therefore the tanur acts as a kli sharet, and that's what's mikadesh them. Kli sharet the cheres lo avdinan, and we don't make kli sharet out of earthenware utensils. And the Gemara is going to explain in a second. We have a machloket as to whether wood is allowed to be used with regards to kli sharet, but everybody agrees that kli cheres are not a possible option for kli sharet, and therefore you have to use an oven that's made out of metal. Gemara's question here, it says, we could have fired it inside the oven, and we could have solved the problem of bliut by doing such. So then the Gemara says, that's not a solution here, because you're right in terms of kashrut, you're right in terms of getting rid of the problem of shvirat kli cheres. We have a secondary problem, which is it's functioning as a kli sharet. In order to function as a kli sharet, it needs to be metal and not be kli cheres. So now the Gemara continues and says, Va'afilu Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda lo kamar ela de'etz. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda is the mekil with regards to kli sharet, who allows you to make it out of wood, about the cheres lo. But when it comes to cheres, he says that that is not an option for a kli sharet. That the Gemara discusses in Sukkah, that discusses with regards to menorah in Menachot, as to whether wood and kelim are considered to be kli sharet. And there's a big Tosafot at the beginning of Ezum Koman that also discusses it with regards to a knife being a kli sharet and what materials can function as a kli sharet. So Rav Yitzchak Rav Yehuda, Avarogil Kameid Rami Bar Chama. So Rav Yitzchak Rav Yehuda was learning by Rami Bar Chama. Shavke, he left learning by him, Azul Rav Sheshet, and he went to learn by Rav Sheshet. Yomachad Pagal Bey. So one day, Rami Bar Chama bumped into Rav Yitzchak Rav Yehuda. Amalei, Al Kafto Nakton Recha, Atalad Yad. This is a common expression. The person says to the governor, grab onto my hand, so that I can get the fragrance of royalty. Meaning that if you think you associate with royalty, that makes you into royalty. Somehow that elevates your status when you hang around with people of high stature. And he says, Mishom de azlat lach de kamei de Rav Sheshet. You think because you went to learn with Rav Sheshet, Havid lachaki Rav Sheshet, you're going to become like Rav Sheshet? So obviously Rav Sheshet was a renowned Gadol Ador. And what Rami Bar Chama is saying to him is, you left me because you thought you're on such a high level that you're going to become like Rav Sheshet. So you went to learn by Rav Sheshet so you could turn into Rav Sheshet? That's why you went over there? So Amalei, la mishum hachi. He says, that's not the reason I left you to go learn by Rav Sheshet. Mar ki bi'ina milto. When I used to ask you questions, Rami Bar Chama, pasha li misvara, used to answer me, logically, you'd give a logical argument. Kimashkachna matnita, when we used to find a braita, or I found a braita that undermined the logic, percholah, then we were left with nothing. So, Rami Bar Chama is renowned for his harifut, for his svara, for his ability to think through things and solve problems, but he was not as careful about his girsa, about his misora, in terms of braitot and other items. So now he would come up with answers to problems based on Svara, but now would run into a problem because he wasn't necessarily clued in or focused on the Braita. And then Rav Yitzchak Rav Yehuda would find a Braita that said the opposite, and then he's left in a difficult position because an Amora can't argue on a Braita, and if the Braita says otherwise, then the Svara of Rami Bar Chama falls apart. Rav Sheshet Kibyana Milta Minei, Rav Sheshet has a different proof. He's also known as a Sinai, like Rav Yosef. He's someone who was renowned for his knowledge and misora of the braitot. Pashat limi matnito. He answers me through a braita. Dechinami mishkachat matnito. Even if I find another braita that argues on the braita that he brought me, upircha, and I have a question on him, matnito manatnitai. It's braitot or machloket a braitot or machloket a tanaim. So Namora can align himself with one of two tanaim, and his position can stand. He can't argue outright on a tana, but he can't take a position that agrees with one Tana over another Tana. So Rav Sheshet, when he answers me, he's backing himself up with a Braita. And even if I find alternative Braitot, that doesn't mean that Rav Sheshet's position is undermined, because he has a Tana that supports it. You, who are giving me answers through Svara, every time I found a Braita that by definition undermines your position because you can't argue on a braita. So Amalei, so Rami Bachama says, what are you talking about? I'll challenge you. By my name Milta, Div Shalach Kimatnita. Ask me a question, and I'll answer you logically, and I'll come to the same conclusion as a braita. By my name, the question he asked of him, Bishel b'miksat kli ta'un mirika v'shtifa o ein ta'un. If he cooks in a portion of a kli, does he require mirika and shtifa on the entire kli, or does he only require mirika and shtifa in the location where he did the cooking? The Bali Tosafot, in trying to understand the nature of the question, formulated in one of two ways. Says, what's the question over here? If a portion of the kli is on the esh, shemishvashel bo cham, v'shara kli tzonein, and the remainder of the kli is cold, imkein maika amar. What is the question over here? That Bishel spreads the bliut throughout the kli, how could that be? The remainder of the kli is cold. And when it's cold, it doesn't spread. Heat is the conductor of flavor, it's the conductor of anything through the kli. So if half the kli is hot and half the kli is cold, there's no question over here because there's no way it's moving the flavor over. On the other hand, if the entire kli is hot, and this is the way that the Shita Mekubetzet explains over here, the entire kli is hot, but Perush Shemitzat Acher Hu Chutz La'esh, but the other half of the kli is outside of the fire, then what's the question? Because im shakola kli cham, if the entire kli is cham, if it's hot all the way across, and the question is, does the flavor spread throughout the kli when the entire kli is hot, then that's not just a question about marika and shtifa, that's a more general question about isurim in general. We have an isur that's cham on the portion of the pot, but the whole pot is hot, does it spread it to the entire pot? So then why did he ask the question in particular about marika and shtifa? He could have asked the question about any isur in the Torah. So that's why the Dalai Tosfot said they're a little bit bothered about what's the nature of the question here. The question should either be that there's no question because it's cold and nothing spreads, or the question should be about other Isurim as well, not just about Mrika and Shtifa. So the answer to the question is given by both the two scenarios that Tosfot presents. One scenario is the fact that it was hot on one side, cold on the other side. And you're right, by Shar Isurim, it doesn't spread, there's no Mifapeya. The question is here, is there a Gzeret HaKetuv by Mirika and Shtifa that you have to deal with the whole kli? Now, you have to do Mirika and Shtifa, it has to be done on the whole kli, and that's the nature of the question over here. Despite the fact that the flavor doesn't spread, but nevertheless, maybe there's a demand for Mirika and Shtifa over the entire kli. I mean, it's a Gzeret HaKetuv with the guards do Mirika and Shtifa. The other possibility is that the entire kli is Cham, but the Gemara's assumption over here is that it's not like the Mandamar, that it's Mifapeya, that we don't assume that the flavor spreads from one section of the kli to the other section of the kli when the item is only found in that one section of the kli. And so the Gemara's assumption is it's not Mifapeya. It's not spreading over here. And then once again, the question is about Mirika and Shtifa. Is there a Gzeret HaKetuv to require Mirika and Shtifa in all the kli, even if it's not Mifapeya, even if it is not spreading throughout the kli? So those are the two ways to formulate the question. Once Tosfot presents the problem, then you have to say, in both instances, it's a question about a Gzeret HaKetuv, and the Gzeret HaKetuv is questioning exactly what Tosfot points out, which is that maybe Mirika and Shtifa, even in a case of Tzonein, requires full kli, even though Isur doesn't spread, or we don't believe that Isur spreads even when the entire kli is Cham, but nevertheless, maybe Mirika and Shtifa have a Gzeret HaKetuv that require Mirika and Shtifa throughout a kli. So Amalei ain't own. It does not require a Mirika and Shtifa over the whole kli. Midid hava ahazot. It's no different than the splashing of the Dama Chatat onto the Beged. Just like the splashing of the blood onto the Beged, only in the location where the blood splashed do you need to launder. So it's over here. Only in the place where there was an item in there that was Bishul in there do you require Mirika and Shtifa. We know the two psukim are juxtaposed because many of the dinim relate one to the other. Va'alo tani hochi, or the Girsa that Rashi has over here, va'alo tanyo hochi. We don't find any braita that supports what you're suggesting over here. And you said to me, you're going to give me an answer that we're going to find in a braita. Amar lei, Sarami Barchama says, they mistavro kebeget. It makes logical sense what I'm saying, even if you can't find it in a braita. That which I'm saying is logical. Ma beged ain't own kibus, ela makom adam. Just like the beged only requires kibus in the place of the dam. Av kli ain't own mirika v'shtifa, ela makom bishul. Amar lei. So now, Rav Yitzchak Bar Yehuda says, that midomi. How can you compare the cases? Dam lo mifapeya. Dam doesn't spread. Bishul mifapeya. Bishul spreads with heat. The heat is conductive, and therefore it spreads the bishul throughout the kli. That's not true of dam. Now, it doesn't mean that Rav Yitzchak Bar Yehuda believes that cham is mifapeya. He's just pointing out that you can't make that logical argument or the logical jump from dam to bishul, because there are differences between dam and bishul, and those fundamental differences would make it that you can't necessarily make a logical conclusion that that which is true by dam will also be true by bishul. Ve'ol tanyo, and we have a brayta, chomer ba'za'a mimirika. There are certain things that by haza'a, the kibus of the dam achatat, that are more chamor than mimirika and shtifa. Chomer mimirika and shtifa, and the cleansing of the kli nechoshet, certain items there are more chamor mibaza'a than the case of the dam that goes on the beged. Chomer ba'za'a, sha'za'a, yeshna b'chata'ot achitzonot, u'b'chata'ot apnimiyot. Because when it comes to the azav, the dam, it applies to a broader range of korbanot, both the chatot achitzonot and the chatot apnimiyot, as opposed to merikan shtifa, which is only relevant to the korbanot anechalim, the korbanot that are eaten, because the pasuk after kli cheres asher tuvash shel bo yishaver min klei nechoshet bushala, murak v'shutaf b'mayim, kozochar b'kornim yochalota, kodesh kodeshim hi. So there we have the achila juxtaposed to the klei nechoshet, and that tells you only korbanot anechalim are subject to this din. V'yeshna lifnei zrika, and it applies to lifnei zrikat adam, which is not true by the case of bushal, murak v'shutaf, which is about a chatat, post the zrikat adam. It's when the basar is already the state of being ready to be eaten, and it's in a pot being heated up or cooked. It's mashen kein b'mirika shtifa, chomer b'mirika shtifa, and there's a chomra b'mirika shtifa, sh'mirika shtifa, nuheget, ben b'kodshei kodashim, ben b'kodshei kalim. When it comes to mirika shtifa, as we saw in the Mishnah, it has application to kodshei kodashim and kodshim kalim, at least according to the chachamim. And bishel b'miksat akli, to mirika shtifa, kol akli, mashen kein baza, which is not true by haza'a. By haza'a, it only applies to chata'ot. It does not apply to other korbanot. Number two is that when the dam spills, we saw in the Mishnah, you only have to wander the place where the dam is, not the whole thing. Over here, we have it saying, bishel b'miksat akli, you cook in a portion of the kli, to mirika shtifa, kol akli. You require mirika and shtifa for the entirety of the kli. Which is not true by dam. Amalei. So now Rami Bar Chama is caught in a bind. He said, I'm going to give you a logical argument that will be just as good as a braita. Meantime, the braita says just the opposite of what Rami Chama says. And he has to accede and say, Amalei, itanya, tanya. As if there's a braita, there's a braita. I can't override the braita. I can't argue on the braita. But time am I. What's the reason behind this? Amar Kara, because the pasuk says, ve'im b'kli nechoshet pushala, afilu b'miksat kli, the bet of im b'kli. B'kli means even in a portion of the kli, nechoshet, it was cooked. That means that even if miksat the kli, there's still a requirement of morak v'shutaf b'mayim on the entirety of the kli. So that's the gzeret ha-katov, that even if miksat the kli is where the bishul happened, the entire kli requires rika v'shtifa. Echad kodshei kodoshim. We saw in the Mishnah, the machlok between the Chachamim and Rabbi Shimon, as to where this din applies. The Chachamim said the din applies to Echad Kodshei HaKodashim Echad Kodshei Kalim. So Rabbi Shimon believed he only dealt with Kodshei Kodashim, but not with Kodshim Kalim. So the Gemara wants to understand what's this machloket about. So the Gemara says, Tarabanan, Chatat. The Pasuk says, or speaking about a Chatat. Ein li ela Chatat. Kol kodoshim minayin. How do I know to include all kodoshim? Tom Lomar, kodesh kodoshim hi. So the pasuk says, kodesh kodoshim hi. So that's an inclusive term that says that it has application to more than just the issue at hand. The parshia is talking about Torah tachatat. So it's speaking about a chatat, that's the context. But then right after, kli cheresh, asher tushal bo, ishaver, vim kli nechoshet, bushala, umorak, vishutaf mamayim. It says, kol zachar bekonim yochal ota. Kodesh Kodoshim Hi. So that the Kodesh Kodoshim is an expansive term. And we saw the same issue with regards to bringing the dam into the Heichal, that it's Posela Chatat. That's the next pasuk right after that, which is Chol Chatat. Asher Yuvami Damal Omoed. Chaber B'Kodesh Lo Te'achel Ba'esh Tisareif. And there, the same machloket as to whether it only has application by Chatat, or is the Kodesh Kodoshim beforehand also impact and tell you that it's broader than just the chatat. So here we're saying the Kodesh Kodeshim is including all korbanot. Yochol shani merabe et ha-truma. You would think I also include truma. Tamad omar ota prat l'truma. The pasuk says, Kol zachar b'kodim yochol ota. Ota is a miut. And therefore we're going to exclude truma from this din. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. That's the view of Rabbi Yehuda, the Chachamim in our Mishnah, as to why chatat, kodshei kodashim, and kodshim kalim are all subject to the din of morak v'shutaf b'mayim, and truma is left out. So that's the position of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Shimon omer, kodshei kodashim tu'unim mirka v'shtifa, kodshim kalim einam tu'unim mirka v'shtifa. Dichtiv, kodshei kodashim in, kodshim kalim lo. So he does learn it that way, that Kodshei Kodashim means literally Kodshei Kodashim and not Kodshim Kalim. So my time, the Rabbi Yehuda, mi de itzrech ota lemeute truma, since you need the word ota to exclude truma, miklad de Kodshim Kalim to unim mirka shtifa. That shows you, or that demonstrates to you, that the Kodshim Kalim do require mirka shtifa. Because had it been that Kodshim Kalim were excluded, then you wouldn't need the word ota to exclude truma, because by definition it'd be excluded. If Kodshim Kalim are not included, then certainly Truma is not included. The fact that you say Ota is Mimaye Truma is indicative of the fact that Kodshim Kalim are included. Now the Tosafot give further explanation to this and say that why don't you say the word Ota comes to exclude Kodshim Kalim. The Pasuk says Kodshei Kodoshim. That makes more sense to say that the Kodshim Kalim are left out. The Bayit Tosafot point out that the dummy is similar to Emiyot HaChamiyot HaLerabot. So it has to exclude something, so that something's going to be Truma, but it's going to include Kodshim Kalim because there are two Miyutim, and the two Miyutim are, in essence, Merabe the Kodshim Kalim, which means that the Ota, which is Mimayit the Truma, the Kodshim Kodoshim, which is also Mimayit, is going to be Merabe the Kodshim Kalim, and the Ota is going to be Mimayit the Truma. And so that way we can bring balance to the Miyutim in the Pasuk, as well as the Miyot HaChamiyot L'Rabot. Rabbi Shimon Amar Lecha Ota Kidamrinan. Rabbi Shimon, as we saw earlier in the Masechta, already uses the word Ota when he argues on Rabbi Akiva with regards to Psulim, with the Hazat Adam, when the Dam Chatat sprays onto the individual, when is it considered to be Dam that requires Kibbutz? That's when it's Dam Kasher. When it's Dam Pasul, it does not require Kibbutz. Over there, we had a machloket as the definition of Dam Pasul. Rabbi Shimon believed that the Ota over there comes to exclude even something that had Shata Kosher. Even something that was at one point was Kasher and then became Pasul, that's still considered to be Pasul, and you don't need Kibbutz of Beged for it. Rabbi Kiva argued over there and said if you had Shata Kosher, it also requires Kibbutz. So according to Rabbi Shimon, he already used the word Ota over there for dealing with the issue of Psulim with regards to Zadam. So now he doesn't have the Ota left over. He doesn't have the Miut of Ota. So if he doesn't have the Miut of Ota, all he has is Kodshei Kodashim and not Kodshim Kalim. He only has that one Miut there. That one Miut tells you that it is Kodshei Kodashim, it's not Kodshim Kalim. By definition, it's also not going to be Truma, because if Kodshim Kalim are excluded, so is Truma. That's what we said about Rabbi Shimon's position over there. He doesn't need Ota to exclude Truma, because by definition, if Kodshim Kalim already excluded, so is Truma. Now, Gemara says, Utruma lo baye shtifa umirika. Is it really true that Truma doesn't require shtifa umirika? The assumption being over here, and you can see that a little bit in the Tosafot, that is, doesn't it require hagala? Doesn't a pot or a utensil that was used with Truma require kashering after you used it with Truma? And so that's Vatanyo. Don't we have a brighta? Derash bisho ba basar. If you have a pot in which you cooked basar, lo yivashel ba chalav. You can't use it for milchiks afterwards, because you have the tam basar that's absorbed into the kli, and then if you put milchiks in it, you now have basar v'chalav. So you have to kasher the kli basar before you use it for chalav. Vim bishel benotein tam. And if you do cook it in there, whether it is kasher or not kasher will be determined by notein tam. Is there notein tam of basar in the chalav? And if there is notein tam of basar in the chalav, it'll be a problem of basar v'chalav. If there's so much chalav that overwhelms the flavor of the basar, then it'll be batel and it'll be kasher. Utruma lo yiveshel ba chulin. If you used it for truma, you should not cook chulin in it. Vim bishel. And if you do cook the chulin in it, benotein tam. Once again, if there is sufficient chulin to overwhelm the flavor of the truma that is embedded in the pot, then it'll be batel and it'll be fine. If, on the other hand, it is not sufficient, then it'll take on the properties of the truma and it'll be asur lezar. But you see from that braita that truma is problematic when it's absorbed into a kli, and you can't just go on without doing anything in order to kasher that kli. this does favor or does lean towards saying that the necessity for Mikan Shtifa has to do with Bliut, has to do with absorption, because Gemara is quoting a Braita that is dealing with exactly that problem of Kashrut and Bliut. So that's why it would favor heavily saying that. Number two is, generally, Truma is 100 to 1.
Din of Bitul of Echad B'meya, with regards to Truma, is only in a din B'min B'mino. But Min Shibe'eno Mino, over there, it's a din in Etina Tam.
Over here, even by Truma, it's not 100 to 1, it is Notin Tam. Amar Abaye, Lo Tzricha, Elo the Amar Mar. You need it to make distinction, this halacha that was said. Bishel B'mikzat Kli, Ta'on Marika V'shtifa Kola Kli. Because when it comes to kodashim, or whatever you think requires mikan shtifa, there, if you cook on a portion of the kli, as we saw in the braita before, then you have to do mikan shtifa on the entire kli. Hachuma lo tzarich ela makom bishul. By chuma, you only have to do it in the location where you cooked. You don't have to do it outside of that location. So in essence, what he is saying is, there's a distinction between chuma and kodashim. By Kodoshim, you have a Gzeret HaKatuv of Merikan Shtifa that demands that you cleanse the entire Kli, even though you've only done Bishul on a portion of the Kli. On the other hand, for Truma, you're trying to kasher the Kli. And since you're trying to kasher the Kli, you just need to kasher the area where the Bishul took place, where there was a Bliut. And again, that would support the view that we do not worry about mifapeya. We don't worry about the item spreading when it's heated up. Only the location where it is balua, that's where you need to kasher it. And therefore we're concluding over here that it's not mifapeya. The flavor does not spread even when it's hot. And just like that's true over here by Truma, it's going to be true by all other Isurim. And the exception to the rule is Kodoshim, which have a Gzeret HaKatuv, Merikan Shtifa. Although the Rashba over here argues that this is a unique din to Truma and Kodoshim, because Truma and Kodoshim are unique in the fact that they are absorbed while they are heter. And therefore, here, if you are machlish, whatever the item is, when it was absorbed as heter, we don't worry about the mifapeh or the spread of the flavor, because when the flavor entered, it was heter, and you've already weakened that flavor that was of heter. And therefore, we allow you to be mevatel et lechatchila. But that means you cannot extrapolate this din to other isurim. It would be uniquely associated with Truma and Kodoshim because they are Bliot Shel Heter. So any Bliah Shel Heter would have this din, but any Bliah Shel Isur would not have this din, and we would not allow you, first of all, to weaken it, and then to be Mevatel et Lechatchila. Whereas in these cases, there's a Hakala to allow you to weaken it, and then be Mevatel et Lechatchila, because when it was absorbed as Heter. Rav Amar makes a different suggestion. Lo tzricha el da amar mar b'mayim. That which we learned that it has to be done b'mayim. The pasuk says v'im kli nechoshet b'shalom morak v'shutaf b'mayim. From that we learn b'mayim v'lo b'yayin. You have to use water and not wine. B'mayim v'lo b'mazug. You have to use water and not diluted wine. Ha, when it comes to truma, afilu b'yayin v'afilu b'mazug. So there is a gzeret haketuv for the mrika and shtifa that is done by Kodoshim, that it must be done with water. On the other hand, when it comes to the Merikan Shtifa of Truma, over there, you're just trying to kasher it. There's no Gzeret HaKetuv of Mayim, and therefore you can do it even with other liquids. You can use wine, you can use diluted wine, in order to do that kashering process. Rabba Bar Ula Amar, Lo Tzricha Ela D'Amar Mar, Merika U'Shtifa Bitzonein. That you only need it because Merikan Shtifa are done in cold. Ha afilo bechamin. Over here, it's even bechamin. As Rashi explains over here, the truma just needs hagalah. And you can see that in the Baal Tosafot. What you need to do is hagalah in order to get rid of the bliut in the truma. So there, if you just do it with hot water or whatever hot item it is to remove the flavor, it will be sufficient. By the case of Kodeshim, you have to do Hagalah, and after you finish with Hagalah, you have to do Merika and Shtifa Bitzonei. There's an additional requirement of Merika and Shtifa afterwards, after you've already done Hagalah, after you've already kashered it. So the Merika and Shtifa is an extra level of washing of the kli, not necessarily connected to the Bliut, because it's all done Bitzonei, but it's something that's done in addition to the Hagalah. Gemara says, wait a minute, that works well for the person who says that merika and shtifa are all done in cold. The one who says that merika is done with hot water and shtifa is done with tzonein, or in essence, merika is hagala, as Rashi says over here, it's the kashering of the kli, And shtifa is the tzonein. It's the cold water that you rinse it off with or wash it with afterwards. Ma'ika l'meimar. Then what are you going to stay over here? Shtifa yeterta. You have to do an extra cleansing. So now there are two ways to read this Gemara, and it has a major nafkamina as to the practices which the Balei Tosafot point out over here. There is a minog from the time of the Geunim that when you kasher a clay, after you finish kashering the clay, you rinse it out with cold water. There seemingly is no source for this fact that we wash it out with cold water afterwards. There is a Misora from Rashi that the reason we do it is to wash away the stuff that was niflat, that was taken out of the clay. So we want to wash it out so it doesn't get reabsorbed into the clay. And therefore we rinse it in cold water afterwards. That's by the name of Rashi. Here the Balei Tosafot say maybe this is the source for that minhag, because it depends how you read shtifa yeterta over here. When you say shtifa yeterta, does that mean you do two rinses? Or does that mean you do a single rinse? So there are two ways to read the Gemara. You can either read the Gemara, and then this would be supportive of the minhag, which is to say that when it comes to truma, you have to do merika bechamin and shtifa betzonei. Ah, so then what differentiates kodeshim in this case? Shtifa yeterta. Beyond the original Marika and the Shtifa, you have to do another Shtifa afterwards, a second Shtifa. And then that would be supportive of this Minog, because even for Truma, when you're just trying to kasher the pot, you have to do Marika and Chamin and Shtifa Betzonei. Or the other way to read the Gemara, and this is the way the Balei Tosafot read the Gemara over here, and that's the way the Rashi reads it over here, and it seems to fit better into the wording of the Gemara, is that Shtifa Yeterta means that for Truma, you just need to do Marika. You just do Marika, not shtifa at all. And then for kodeshim, you do the shtifa because you need merika and the shtifa, and therefore there's only one washing or one rinsing that happens in the shtifa. And then the Balei Tosafot say, if that's the case, where's the source for this practice that we have? He says, v'yesh l'mo mikan t'kelim asurim k'shmagim ein tzarich l'shotfam b'tzunein achrei kein afo pi sh'nuagim ata lasot kein. Says, from our Gemara, it sounds like you do not need to rinse it afterwards. He says, that should be the conclusion of this Gemara. Despite that conclusion, the minog is to rinse out the kli with tzonein after it's been heated up. The Balei Tosafot over here favors saying that it's a minog and not a din from this Gemara. There are others who read the Gemara as being a shtifa yeterta, teaching you that the core shtifa is the one that is this practice, and then the additional shtifa is the second shtifa that you do for the kodoshim because of that requirement midoraita. If that's the case, this would be the source for that practice, and it wouldn't just be a minog, it'd be a dinah de Gemara. All right, next Mishnah. Rabbi Tarfon Omer, Bishel mitchilat haregel, yivashel bo kol haregel. If you used a pot at the beginning of the regel, you can continue using it throughout the regel. The idea being, as Rashi notes over here, below merika u'shtifa, you don't have to do merika u'shtifa, but sof haregel yimrok v'yishtof. At the end of the regel, you'll do the merika u'shtifa that's demanded of you. The time in Mefresh with Gemara, the time Gemara is going to explain the reasoning, and this is what we mentioned yesterday, that clay kodesh, if you keep utilizing them, then they keep being polite, whatever isur is in there, and then you can keep recycling through the plita, blia, and that's why there's no problem over here until the end of the regel, because at the end of the regel, you stop using it. And then once you've stopped using it, then you can't say that there was a plita, and therefore there's bliut in there, and now you need shtifam rika at the end of the regel. So very good. So the Raivud says exactly what you're saying, which is that this is not just a din in the regel. This is a din in general, even in chulin. That's what it sounds like, that as long as you're using a kli on a continuous basis, then you're not going to have this problem. So he does extrapolate this din to apply more broadly, even to the rest of the year, and not just to kodoshim, and not just to the regel. There's such volume on the regel that it's continually used. But as far as he's concerned, it applies even outside of the regel. The Rambam, on the other hand, has a very different view about what Rabbi Tarfon's shita is. And he writes here in the Parasha Mishnayot, Rabbi Tarfon Omer, Shebemoed ein machayvin limroka kli, kishetichla achila. There's no requirement of mikan shtifa when you finish eating. V'ra'oi lo limrok oto b'sof hayom. But you should do it at the end of the day. But mipnei shu asuk b'simchat haregel. Because he's too involved in simchat haregel, therefore he gets a dispensation or a postponement of the necessity to do mikan shtifa because of Simchat HaRegel. The Rambam sees Rabbi Tarfon Shita having to do particularly with Simchat HaRegel, and then you cannot extrapolate it outside of this area. It's because it's a dispensation, because of Simchat HaRegel, we don't make you do Merika and Shtifa until the Regel is over. But absent the Regel, you would have to do Merika and Shtifa. That's the view of the Rambam as to why Rabbi Tarfon says this. Chachamim omrim, ad zman achila, Merika v'shtifa. So that until the time that it can be eaten, You have to do Merikat Shtifa. It's not clear here whether that means before the time expires, you need to do Merikat Shtifa. Or does that mean once the time expires, you need to do Merikat in Shtifa. Either way, it's clear from the Rabbanan that you're going to have to do Merikat Shtifa either on that day or the next day when there's an expiry of the time period in which you can eat the Korban, and that there is no postponement until the end of the regel, either because they don't believe that that Ta is sufficient to take the Isur out, or according to the Rambam, they don't have this dispensation of Simchat HaRegel. So now the Gemara explains Mirika and Shtifa. Mirika is Kimirikat HaKos. Mirika is like the cleaning of a cup, which Rashi says over here, means Mibifnim, means rinsing it out internally. Koshel Bracha, like the Koshel Bracha that's mentioned in the Gemara in Brachot, Shadon HaDacha Bifnim, requires rinsing on the inside, Ushtifa Mibachutz, and he already gives you the indication what the next part is Ushtifa Kishtifatakos, and Shtifa is also like the rinsing of a cup, and Merika is HaDacha, means rinsing internally, Shtifa means rinsing on the outside. That is Rashi's view as to what Merika and Shtifa over here. Once again, the Rambam argues in the Perush Mishnayot on Rashi, and he also brings this in the Gemara Brachot, but he says here that the explanation, Hakibus Hamuflak, very strong cleansing, Ashimei Sir Mashnik Bakba Kelim, to the point where it removes things that are stuck in the Kelim, Ikra Merika. That is called Merika. Vitosefet Hanikiyut, Yikre Shtifa. And the additional cleaning afterwards, or the rinsing, is called Shtifa. He doesn't shake it, he just rubs it around. And they say that Merika is done with hot, and Shtifa is done with cold. What does that mean in the Mishnah? He says, Rotzelamar, Shenu Chayav Laflig as Yasir Kol HaRoshim. You don't have to cleanse it or give it such a fundamental cleaning to the point where you start scraping off a piece of the cleat. You clean it like you clean a coast that has, depends what you mean, like a regular coast that you want to clean, or a coast that has Isser in it, how you clean it. So that's the necessity of you. That's what Merika is. So the Rambam reads Merika as being a full and deep cleansing of the Kli. That's why he says that the Merika is done Bechamin and the Shtifa is done Bitzonein. And the Shtifa is just a simple rinse where you mix it around and you take it out, you rinse the Kli, and then you wash it out. So that's how the Rambam views Merika versus Shtifa. And therefore he reads the next line of the Mishnah as being Merika Bechamin, Bishtifa Bitzonein, and you can see that in the Nusach Acher that's brought on the right side of the Gemara. Although the way we have it in our Mishnah is Merika Vishtifa Bitzonein, that our Mishnah believes that Merika and Shtifa are both done by cold water. And again, that goes to that machloket that we just saw before between whether Merika and Shtifa is done Bitzonein, or is Merika Bechamin and Shtifa is Bitzonein, which we will see in tomorrow's daf. Hashipud Vaskala, when it comes to a spit and a grill or a griddle, magilin bechamin, you do hagala in hot water. So now that is a very difficult thing because generally a spit and a grill are used over open flames. If they're used over open flames, they should require libun and they should not require hagala. So that is a question asked by the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, if you remember, because the Gemara at the end of Avodah Zarah has a Mishnah that says a shibur askala require mavirin ba'esh, they require libun. So the Gemara over there has a large number of answers from the Amoraim as to why it is that Gemara over here says that you need Hagalah, and the Gemara over there says you require Libun. One of the answers that is given is the difference in what is being Balua. That over here, you're Bolea Heter. When that which is absorbed was absorbed into the clay, it was absorption of Heter. It only later on became Isur, as opposed to that which is in Avodah Zarah, where the Isur is absorbed in the original state. It's Isur that caused the problem to start out with. And so therefore, when there's Isur that's absorbed, you need Libun to get rid of it. When it's Heta that's absorbed, it turned to Isur later, then you only need Hagalah to get rid of it. The other reason given over here is the same reason that we spoke about earlier in the Mishnah, which is B'chol Yom Naseh Giul L'Chavero, which is this idea that since it's in constant use, there's a weakening of whatever's inside of the item, and therefore it suffices with Hagalah to get rid of the problem, as opposed to the grill or the spit over there, which isn't in constant use. It doesn't have the constant Giul, and therefore it requires Libun in order to get rid of the Iser that is there. Or the other possibility is that the Hagalah that's mentioned over here is the kiyum of the din d'oraita of Merika and Shtifa. It's not about kashering the kli, it's about the kiyum of Merika and Shtifa. You might still need libun to kasher the kli before you do the Merika and Shtifa, which is the kiyum d'oraita. So over there, the Gemara gave a number of those answers based on the Amoraim, But over here, our Mishnah says it requires Hagalah, and we just discussed why that might be, even though normally these items which are used in the fire would require Libun. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Gemara on the top of Tzadi Zayin Amud Aleph.